Mazzara and Parra project to Amiwara. Herrera, Cabrera, don't let the Bay Bib scare ya. Machado or Bono or Nolan Garantano.
We'll teach you how to win Rondo. Start, sit, and drop, and all you need to know. Alonzarik Porcello. Now let's get on with the show.
And we're back. Fantasy Baseball Today. Welcome. Adam and Scott here. Adam Azer, Scott White. You can follow us on Twitter at CBS Scott White, at Adam Azer, A-I-Z-E-R. Are you verified, by the way?
Of course I'm verified.
I'm not verified. How do I get verified?
I don't know. I'm surprised you're not verified. I just showed up with a verification tag one day, but that was, you know, 5 years ago or something.
I'm going to email our social media guy. I'm going to email Joe. How do I get verified on Twitter? This has gone on too long, Scott White.
I agree. People think you're the fake Adam Azer.
No. It's the real deal here.
Raining terror down. I actually opened a Twitter account 7 years ago, I think it was. But I didn't use it the first couple years. I was just kind of checking things out, you know.
Is this thing going to get popular? I'm going to wait to see if I'm into this.
Yeah, exactly. What inspired me to actually start using it is somebody started a fake Scott White account and was tweeting all the baseball writers on the site, claiming to be me. So
what?
I figured, yeah, this actually happened. I don't know. Because, you know, I have a decent number of Twitter followers, but it's not like I'm of any stature that you'd think anybody want to try and claim they're me. You know?
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Wow.
Hasn't happened since.
Good.
But that's what really got me going on the Twitter.
Well, today on the show, a little bit of Week 26 talk, a lot of your emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. We're going to have some fun today. Wow. D. Gordon. That home run. One of the best you're ever going to see. One of the most meaningful home runs, Scott. That was amazing.
It was. Did you watch? Did you watch the game? I mean that whole game was.
No, I watched the pregame ceremony and a little bit of the first inning. I watched the top of the first, and then I was flipping back to the Yankees game, and I missed the home run. I turned the game back on when he was rounding the bases. And I was like, what? No, I was like, no way. And I was upset with myself for missing it, but amazing.
I mean, he completely clobbered it. And, yeah. And right after that tribute from the right-handed batter's box, it was, the game was the most emotional baseball game I've ever seen. And I feel like all of these things we're saying, like I was calling Jose Fernandez the LeBron James of pitchers. I feel like all of this probably sounds like hyperbole, most emotional game I've ever seen. But I mean, how often do you see players sobbing on the field? Never see that. And the announcers, the Mets announcers are getting choked up as they're trying to broadcast the game. It was just, now I'm getting teared up again.
Yeah.
I managed to go today without crying, finally. It was the first time. And now you're getting me going again.
Sorry. I imagine the Thurman Munson game was similar. That was back in the late 70s. And, you know, Piazza hitting that home run on 9/11. But that was like, what, a week after? Because they delayed baseball for a little while. So I don't remember the exact circumstances, but no, you don't see players just like openly sobbing, and that was happening. D. Gordon rounding the bases and crying, and wow, amazing, amazing game. I'm so glad they won, and it had nothing to do with the Mets. Even when D. Gordon hit that home run, and that was a huge game for the Mets. Gary Cohen, their broadcaster, was like, I don't care who you're rooting for. That was amazing. So, it affected Bartolo Colon, in terms of a fantasy perspective, that was, something you couldn't really foresee, but Terry Collins acknowledged as much that he couldn't really focus because of the emotions of the game. Now, your news and notes, Wilson Ramos tore his ACL. What does this mean for Wilson Ramos in 2017?
That's a good question because, he'll probably have a new team. I would imagine he would still get a pretty nice contract. this offseason, even with that rehabilitation going on, there's a chance it could come later. But I mean, he upped his stature so much with the season he did have. I would assume also that this recovery, ACL, I mean, you're talking a minimum 6 months. That's basically the whole offseason. And I would guess it spills into next season. And it probably means Wilson Ramos is no better than the fourth catcher in my rankings. I mean, that's the thing. Like, catcher's so bad.
Yeah, but
I think Gary Sanchez is definitely ahead of him now. But how much further am I going to go than that? I don't think I can.
All right, but what about this angle? Now, how do you draft catchers? How do you draft Posey and Lucroy next year?
Yeah, I thought about that too. I feel like over the last week, with Gary Sanchez kind of having the second surge after seeming like he had calmed down there.
Yeah, homering off David Price yesterday.
He may have passed Wilson Ramos just on merit, even before this injury to happen to Ramos. So I still think you're talking about a three-man elite tier. And that means the first of them probably shouldn't be going off the board till round three or four. And I would think it's still Posey, but the other two wouldn't be far behind.
Okay. Corey Kluber left Monday's start with groin tightness, just further solidifying the Red Sox stranglehold on the American League championship. They punched their ticket to the World Series. No, I'm exaggerating. We don't know about Kluber, but I guess he's been dealing with this for a little while now, and they took him out in the, I think, the fourth inning or something like that on Monday. So great stuff. The Nationals expect Daniel Murphy and Bryce Harper back for the playoffs, and Harper could actually be back before the end of the regular season. Roman Quinn left yesterday's game with an oblique strain, doing some good things for the Phillies, but on the shelf right now. And I don't know, to be honest. I don't know if he'll be in the lineup, but Matt Carpenter, finger injury. So we thought it was the oblique. He's actually, Scott, been dealing with a finger injury. Carpenter sat on Monday, homered on Tuesday. A lot of people homered on Tuesday. They went up against some bad Reds pitching. But hey, there's an explanation for the struggles, right? The finger?
Yeah, I don't know that we can eliminate the influence of the oblique still, but I think it's pretty obvious based on the way Carpenter's first half went and the way last year went for him, that this version we're seeing to close the season just isn't right, isn't healthy. And I expect, I don't feel like we should hold it against him going into next season. It's hard not to hold it against him at all, because every infield position is so deep. I think originally I was planning on drafting him as early as round two next year. I think that's probably out the window.
Why? Because second base, because the infield is just so deep?
Or because the infield's so deep, and because they're, you know, the numbers keep getting worse with each passing week.
Yeah, but you know that it's injury related. So don't fall for that. He isn't that good.
I'm just saying it's for the most part I'm ignoring it, but you can't completely ignore it.
Oh, you can, buddy.
I don't think you can.
You sure can.
There's so many other good. At all three positions, first, second, and third. Third is actually, gosh, we may have talked about it on the podcast a week or two ago, but I had it all wrong. Third base, again, something that's going to sound like hyperbole. Third base next year, going into next year, is the deepest I've ever seen a position.
Yeah.
In my time doing this. Just to kind of give you a little foretaste, actually, the column's up on the site now, so it's not even really a foretaste, but I go 20 deep in each of the, at least around the infield, previewing these positions. I go 20 deep at each spot. Mikel Franco, 25 home runs this year. Disappointing, but still 25 home runs. Everybody's favorite breakout pick coming into the year. He's not in the top 20.
Now,
I didn't want to leave him out. There were just way too many options. I couldn't
give, give me like one or two guys. Give me 19 and 20.
19 and 20. Okay, 19 and 20 are Jose Reyes and Yulieski Gurriel.
Oh, okay.
So they're arguable. I mean, yeah. I certainly wouldn't have a problem with somebody ranking Franco ahead of them. But it's not just Franco. It's Jake Lamb, who was an all-star snub a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. It's Hernan Perez, who's been a rotisserie darling here to close the season. Yonhervis Solarte, been about as good as Anthony Rendon on a per-game basis, but not a top 20 third baseman for me next year.
Solarte is he is streaky. I never trust him. When he gets going good, maybe he'll be like in a roto league. You just kind of put him in your lineup and he'll be fine throughout the season. Yeah. But he has stretches of you know, really, really good play. I never trust him.
But if he was eligible at any position other than third base, he'd be a no doubt top 20 player.
Yeah, top 20. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of, now I mentioned 19 and 20, which are disputable. 18 is Yoan Moncada, who, if he doesn't win a job in spring training or isn't, you know, it's not clear he's going to have a job within the first 2 months of the season, he could fall out of that top 20 group, but it's just as likely he could move up if he does get a job in spring, you know,
mm-hmm.
as good of a prospect as he is. So that's kind of what we're working with at third base next year, Carpenter, that originally when I ranked Carpenter in the second round, I was thinking, okay, after the obvious top four at the position, the ones who are all going to go in the first round, there's not a clear fifth guy, so maybe that ups Carpenter's stock a little. But then seeing options 6 through 14, 15, 16, no, that's not really the way you should approach it. He should be drafted as a second baseman, actually, next year, Carpenter.
So that's interesting. And the multi-position eligibility is going to be, there's so much of it, right? Next year, just a lot of multi-position eligibility. Yeah.
Yes, that's a growing trend of baseball for sure. There are some key instances of players losing eligibility, most notably at shortstop. I mean, shortstop is going to offer plenty of good hitters compared to past years still. But it's still clearly going to be the thinnest infield position because you have Ian Desmond losing eligibility, Alex Bregman, Jung Ho Kang, and Jose Ramirez. Just there's some things going on like that at every position that might catch people by fantasy owners by surprise.
Alex Bregman, by the way, is back. He is in the lineup today and he appeared yesterday. So Bregman's back. Some noteworthy performers. Hunter Renfroe, Scott, 22% owned. 2 home runs on Tuesday, 7 RBIs against the Dodgers, and he's off to a good start with the Padres.
Yes, and I feel like it became kind of a popular thing to like the trendy approach to take with Renfroe was, you know, to just dismiss him as being that great of a prospect because I guess he didn't walk much at AAA and it was a hitter friendly environment or whatever. I mean, this guy has huge power, and what I think is most encouraging, tiny sample that it is, 1 strikeout and 17 at bats.
Yeah, very nice.
Yeah.
Now I'm gonna skip back to something that I forgot to ask you. I wanted to ask you. You look at the struggles of Michael Franco, relative struggles of Carlos Correa, who certainly did not perform like a first-round pick. And we say it over and over again, the sophomore slump, right? It happens. Mm. You a little worried about Gary Sanchez, top 3 catcher next year?
I am a little worried about that. I'm worried about that with Trey Turner. Otherwise, he'd probably be a first-rounder. I think he's snuck into the second round. I think that's hard to dismiss at this point. But yeah, I worry about it for Sanchez. I worried about it for, I worried about it for Correa coming into this year, and it was kind of validated. But I think to get back to your original point, in Sanchez's case, there's just so little to get excited about a catcher.
Mm-hmm.
And now, especially when the fourth option is going to be coming back from a torn ACL, like there's nowhere else to put him but third, you know.
Yeah, put him third, but is he like way behind or at least 3 rounds behind Posey and Lucroy?
I don't think so.
No,
I don't think so. I mean,
especially if they're going to DH him. I mean, if they're going to DH him next year, and he's going to play almost every day,
and he's
yeah,
I mean, even if he slumps, he's clearly the best power hitter of those 3, I think. I mean, it doesn't measure up in other ways. But yeah, good chance he gets the most consistent playing time of the 3, like you were saying, and the best power hitter of the 3. The only one who I would expect to hit between 25 and 30 home runs, if not more, next year.
Okay. Gary Sanchez. What does he have now? 19? 20?
Yeah, that's why I had to add the "and more," because 25 to 30 actually sounds 20. Like could be underestimating him.
He hit 20 home runs. Unbelievable. Yeah. Okay, we had 4 two-homer games on Monday. We had Segura, Villar, Cano, Duvall. And Segura hit his 20th home run on Tuesday. I saw you did a Twitter poll. Who do you want next year, Jonathan Villar or Gene Segura? What were the results?
I have a lot of those polls going up. As I go through each of these positions, I get the Twitter followers to help me out. So you could see a lot of results, one-on-one player comparisons like that. And it was the VR Segura one you were citing?
Yeah, yeah.
I think VR got about two-thirds of the vote, and I'm not sure I agree with it. I'm allowed to overrule the Twitter polls.
Oh, so wow. You don't really care about the listeners at all.
No, no. You know, mainly what it is a sanity check.
Okay.
And, you know, sometimes, you know, I was wondering if it was ridiculous to even think about putting VR ahead of Segura, considering, here's a fun stat, Adam. The top shortstop in head-to-head points per game this season, this year,
it's
not
VR.
Manny Machado.
It's VR.
It's Gene Segura.
Oh, it's Segura?
It's Segura.
How is it not VR?
VR, I mean, he's in the top six, I think, but he's, no, Machado's clearly second.
Oh, wow. So Segura actually has more fantasy points than VR.
On a per game basis.
No, but overall.
Oh, wait, no, overall, yeah. Overall,
but not many, only,
Machado.
Only.
I was throwing Machado's name in here and confusing everybody.
9.5 more. I mean, look, haven't they played a pretty similar amount of games?
Pretty similar.
So. Yeah, so they're basically, they have basically the same amount of fantasy points.
Well, that's kind of, yeah, I mean, we're talking about slight degrees of separation with them, with Machado, with Corey Seager, Carlos Correa, really like the top 9 or 10 shortstops. It's there's not a huge gap between one and the next.
This is a funny thing to say out loud. Jonathan Villar has 60 more steals than Manny Machado.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Segura and VR both next year is they're BABIP. I mean, this year is probably going to go down as the best year for both of them.
Yeah,
seeing what their BABIPs look like. I mean, they're both. Segura's at 20 home runs now. VR's good chance of getting there.
He's got 18.
VR has doubled up Segura in stolen bases, basically. So I think that gives him a clear roto edge, but Segura makes a lot more contact than VR does. VR walks more, but I think the contact rate in points leagues, ends up being the bigger differentiator and puts Segura ahead. So that, I think ultimately what these initial columns are really just kind of generic one size fits all rankings.
Yeah.
Because I think that makes the most sense this far out. But, you know, eventually they're going to be separate head-to-head and roto rankings. I think it'll probably be a situation where Segura is ahead for me in head-to-head and VR is ahead in roto, since VR does have a significant steals advantage, even though they're both obviously good as far as that goes.
Yeah. Segura has 30, VR has 60.
Yep.
So good steals, guys. And Rougned Odor is 0 for his last 22. Yikes. Got to get going, Rougned Odor.
You know, one of those polls back when I was working on the second base column was Segura versus Odor. And I don't remember the exact number, but I think Odor won with like 85% of the vote, which shocked me.
I think it's pretty easy. I think it's clearly Odor. I look at Segura batting .315 and hitting 20 home runs. You just said it'll probably be his best season. I don't think he's going to hit .314, .315. And I don't think he's a 20 homer guy. So I think Odor still has room to get better.
And I think Segura's probably going to end up being like, what's a good way of putting that? Kind of like the midpoint between Odor and Francisco Lindor.
I don't know what that means.
You don't know what that means? Like, if you average their numbers.
Okay.
Maybe with his power being a little closer to the Lindor end. Because, I mean, it's clear, like, the company Odor is in terms of 22-year-olds who've hit 30-plus home runs in a season
right.
is rare and elite. It's like all players who, you know, if they're not Hall of Famers or will be Hall of Famers, they're just shy of that, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Let's read some emails. Scott, okay. Did we mess up on Monday's show? Dean DiMarzio is just one of about 70 people who told us. Bud and Lou. Somebody said, Dear Bud and Lou. And he said, Who are they? Bud Selig? Lou Piniella? Bud and Lou are... Oh, and then we figured out they're the names of the Joker's dogs.
Yeah, on Batman cartoon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bud and Lou are Abbott and Costello of Who's on First fame. Everybody should know that, especially those that are as involved in baseball as yourselves. You should both have something important taken away from you for blowing that one. I was never more disappointed in the podcast than on Tuesday morning while listening to Monday's show. Awful, says Dean DiMarzio.
I'm not embarrassed, Adam. I'm really not. Abbott and Costello were performing before my parents were born. The only thing I know about them is that they did that Who's on First sketch. That's literally the only thing I know about them. So the fact that their first names weren't on the list of things I don't know about them, I just can't feel embarrassed about that. Sorry.
Yeah,
are you embarrassed?
No, I'm not. I'm really
okay.
not.
All right, there you go.
Yeah.
Sticking together on this.
If they had said, Dear Jim and Elvis, I would have said, Oh, Abbott and Costello. That's easy. But Bud and Lou, not so much. That's a joke. You don't think that's funny? Jim Abbott, Elvis Costello. Clearly no relation between the two of them.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. It was taking my brain a second to catch up.
That's okay. So. Yeah, that's bad jokes tend to do that. This is an email from an interested cheesehead. Dear Down In and The Dumps, I was just bounced from the playoffs after feeling I had the team to beat all season in my 14-team head-to-head standard categories league. I had Gary Sanchez, Miggy, Altuve, Correa, Adam Jones, Marte, Bogarts, Cole, I guess that's Garrett Cole?
I think so.
Maybe Hamels, I don't know. Syndergaard, Bumgarner, Strasburg. And then the playoffs happen and slumps and injuries happen. My league has been thinking about switching to head-to-head points, which I argued against because I don't think you get as personal with the players on your team. However, I don't think that the system we've been using where you have to rely on luck to win the playoffs is serving me well either. Can you suggest a league type that might be better suited to having a better overall whole season, but still makes your roster feel personal?
I've never had an issue being personally invested in my points league teams. I don't even really understand where he's coming from as far as that goes. Do you? Is that
not really? No.
In fact, the teams I'm closest to are my points league teams, and it may not be because the format happens to be points. It may be the people I'm playing against, or the, you know, the fact that it's a dynasty league versus a single season league. But I've never noticed that being a problem. The format that eliminates luck the most is a roto league or just a straight points league without head to head matchups. But that
those have
other issues in terms of holding people's interest all season.
This is fantasy sports. It happens.
Sure. I mean, it happens in real life too. How often in baseball, especially, is the World Series winner the team everyone thinks is the best team?
Well, this year it will be because the Red Sox are going to win it. But everybody thinks the Cubs are the best team. But in actuality, the Red Sox are.
Oh, okay. All right. But you know, neither one could win it. It could
That's
happen.
True.
The Dodgers.
No, it can't.
It
won't happen in the AL. That's impossible. But in the NL, sure.
Head-to-head points is my favorite format, and I think in all of my leagues, help reduce the luck factor in the playoffs. I make each playoff round last 2 weeks instead of the typical one.
Yeah.
Owners still get to set their lineups every week, so it's not like they're going to get burned by injuries early in a 2 week period. You still set your lineup every week, but the commissioner just takes the score from the first week and adds it to the score from the second, and then that's the winner. And I had very few complaints from the people in my league or feelings from myself that if I lost in a 2 week period that I didn't deserve to lose. And that really hasn't happened since I went to doing that. So
yeah, I agree. Absolutely favor that 2 week championship. So what was I going to say? Oh, I have a new MLB rule proposal. Okay.
Okay.
And send this up the line to the highest authority.
I am so plugged in with the MLB offices, Adam.
Yeah.
You have no idea.
Yeah, so let's try to make this happen. So I think baseball should add a 26th man permanently to the roster, and it needs to be a relief pitcher. It just needs to be a pitcher. And I think the injury epidemic with pitchers is just, I don't know, man. I don't know what to do anymore. It's just unbelievable how injured these guys get. And it's a shame. Baseball just becomes so much a game of attrition. And I think maybe lessening the workloads on pitchers by adding another one, another reliever probably, would help. Or maybe teams go six-man rotation. I don't know. But too many pitcher injuries in baseball now. You can't really feel good about a pitching prospect anymore. It's just like, well, when's he going to have Tommy John? That's kind of how I feel, man.
I mean, I don't... I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, you agree.
Know.
It's a great idea. Thank you,
Scott.
Thank you.
Well, look, I mean, how can you ensure that the 26th man is a reliever? Because teams carry different numbers of pitchers. They could just say, oh, yeah, it's a reliever.
Well, everybody probably carries, like, how many do they usually carry? 12-ish?
I think that's the norm, yes.
So
but
then
it just depends on...
Then you have to have a minimum of 12, let's say. I don't know, whatever the number is.
A pitcher minimum.
There has to be, right. You make a pitcher minimum.
I think these things will kind of sort themselves out naturally. We may see six-man rotations in the future like they do in Japan. It's kind of interesting how they do it in Japan because, you know, with an off day every week, like every pitcher has a designated day of the week. So like Mondays were Masahiro Tanaka days.
Yeah.
Which... I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. It's just interesting.
It'd be interesting for ticket sales, that's for sure.
Yeah.
okay, that's, I don't know. Something's got to change. Something's got to change. It probably really begins just from a lot of things I've read and a lot of theories by smarter people, one that I buy into is that young kids just throw too much now. There's no baseball off season when you're in Little League and whatnot. And it all adds up. So if we need to start taking care of it at the, I think like the little league level, honestly, there's just too much wear and tear on these kids' arms.
Yeah, you sound like John Smoltz now.
Is that what he says?
Well, he doesn't like how kids become like the year-round baseball, and they become, you know, solely focused on baseball from such a young age instead of playing in a bunch of different sports, and he thinks that's contributing to the rash of injuries for pitchers, especially. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's got to be something to that. All right, more emails. This is from Jason from Houston. He says, "Dear Bebop and Rocksteady, Scott, who's your favorite Ninja Turtle?" Hold on. I heard what you said.
Okay.
Which sucks because I was going to say there's only one acceptable answer, and you did not give it.
Well, from the cartoon, I think I eventually came to like Raphael the
most.
That's
the acceptable answer.
But in the movies, Donatello was the best. In the video games, my favorite to be was Donatello. So overall, the mean comes out to be Donatello.
What a tremendous video game, by the way.
The Ninja Turtles?
Yeah, and it's basically the same exact game as The Simpsons. Have you noticed that? They're very similar.
I don't think I played the Simpsons game you're referring to.
Oh, really? Like Marge has the vacuum cleaner? She hits people with it? It's the same game as the Ninja Turtles, basically.
I don't think I played a Simpsons Nintendo game. I played a couple of
arcade.
Genesis games. Oh, okay.
Oh, but it's the same one as the Genesis game. Yeah, I think.
I played Bart's Nightmare and Virtual Bart.
That I've never played.
Okay.
But like the Simpsons one where... forget it. Okay, here's the question. What are your thoughts on trading draft picks? Are there any guidelines or rules to live by? Thanks again to Adam, Scott, Heath, and Al, and Chris. Thank you for what you do. You guys deserve immense praise for grinding it out throughout the 6+ months that is the beautiful game of baseball. You are my fantasy baseball Sherpas that helped me get almost to the top of the 2016 mountain. All right, we'll do better, Jason, in 2017. We'll get to the top. But, Scott, what are your thoughts on trading draft picks?
I don't have I take that back. There are a couple sim leagues I play in where you trade draft picks, and it makes for a lot more trade activity. So it is kind of fun. As somebody who commissions a league, I wouldn't want to have to stay on top of the draft order. I do think there's probably something behind the fact that I'm neither of the leagues where we trade draft picks are ones I commission. So I don't think it's necessary, but it does make for more trade activity.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in a football league where I've traded draft picks, and it didn't work out for me. I made a really terrible trade that pretty much set me back for years. But I like it. I mean, I don't have a problem with it, put it that way. And it's a good way to rebuild.
Yes.
I'd say that.
Yes.
Those dynasty football leagues are different, though, because you have rookie drafts, you know, and that people sometimes trade like their second round rookie draft pick, which is oftentimes completely worthless. You don't have that in baseball.
Well, I don't feel like because somebody was trying to get me into a football dynasty league, and I just don't know. I feel like football, there's so much turnover in it all the time that nobody can ever feel like that long term of an investment.
Am I
wrong about that?
I think so.
Other than quarterbacks.
I think wide receivers have a lot of longevity, and I think you could get five good years out of a running back, sometimes more.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of turnover, but I don't quite agree with you there.
Okay, fair enough. I haven't actually done it.
You
so
idiot. So, this is from Scopes from Toronto. Dear Joey Bats and Edwing. Edwing, you think that's a typo?
No, he's referring to Edwing.
Oh, because he does the thing?
Yeah, how he runs around the bases after he hits a home run. Something I only learned this year, by the way. So I act like I'm so smart. But
you see the fisticuffs on Monday between the Yankees and the Blue Jays?
I didn't, actually. No.
Okay, so Severino, bottom of the first inning, hit Josh Donaldson on the elbow. Donaldson, it was clearly not intentional. I mean, he just hit him, and Donaldson stands over the plate. And what I heard on the Yankees broadcast the next day or yesterday was that Donaldson had told his teammates that guys were throwing up and in on him or something, and he kind of wanted them to retaliate. So after Severino unintentionally hits Donaldson, Jay Happ throws behind Chase Headley in the second inning. And then the very next pitch, he hits Chase Headley. And you thought maybe after the first time that it was over, but he hit him. You know,
it's never over.
With second, yeah. So Girardi flipped out because that only got a warning. And he thought that Happ should have been thrown out, which I kind of agreed with. And then Severino throws behind, I don't remember who he hit. It doesn't matter. I think maybe it was Smoke. And then that was in the bottom of the second. And then the next pitch, he hits Smoke. So he gets tossed. Bench is clear. So stupid. And Joaquin Benoit tore his calf or something. I think it was his calf coming out of the bullpen. Like he tripped coming out of the bullpen as the bullpens were empty. And Devin Travis hurt his shoulder. So didn't end up being a very good thing.
No. No, it didn't.
No.
By the way.
Shame on all of them for fighting.
Did you say who the right answer to the Ninja Turtles question was?
Yeah, it's Raphael. Raphael's
it is Raphael. Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
Right. So I said it, and so you didn't.
I'm not giving you credit for that, because Donatello was your answer, but sure.
Oh, okay. I mean, Raphael on the cartoon, he was like the Chandler Bing of the Ninja Turtles, right? I mean, he was...
Could I eat any more pizza?
But he was so different in the movie.
Thank you. Thank you. That was so funny. It took you like 3 seconds to laugh. I'm like, was that not a great joke? It was a great joke.
Again, it took my brain a second to catch up. That was good.
Thank you. Thank you. In the movie, he was a little annoying, and he's such a liability. Here's the question from Scopes. Which of these relief pitchers do you expect to begin next year as their team's closer? Watson, Dyson, Ottavino, Maurer. And are there any current non-closer sleepers going into next year?
I think they're all going to begin next year as their team's closer.
I will say I feel like no on Watson.
I think Watson's going the most likely of them to be there.
I feel like they'll make a move and they'll add a closer.
It's a possibility for any of them, but I don't see it for any. I mean, the Pirates, while still in contention, traded Mark Melancon because they didn't want pay for a closer, and he was in the last year of his contract. So I don't know, that it would surprise me, but it's certainly a possibility.
I feel like Watson was better in the eighth inning than the ninth inning, though.
Okay. Non-closer sleepers. Well, as I said, Mark Melancon is a free agent. It's possible the Nationals sign him. It's possible the Nationals sign someone else. But if they don't, I think Sean Kelly is well equipped to be a closer and could be their closer. We've discussed Hector Neris a few times as the eventual closer for the Phillies.
I'm just going to tell you, I don't. If you are holding on to Dellin Betances, I really don't think he's going to be their closer.
Really?
I think that they're going to get Chapman back.
Huh.
It's been an absolute disaster this month for Betances. He's overworked. And his ERA is like 3 now.
Yeah.
Which is crazy high for him.
Right. I mean, he still has incredible peripherals. But.
Yeah. Oh, he's a great pitcher. But if I'm counting on that in a keeper league, you're not going to have to make your decisions until you know more. But I don't think he's going to be their closer.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. I would guess the Athletics have a different closer. Maybe Ryan Dull. Maybe Sean Doolittle's better by that point.
I wonder what Andrew Miller... what do you think they're going to do next year? Because Miller's still under contract. I don't know if Cody Allen is. I think he is.
Yeah, I think he is too. It's possible there's another trade. It's possible it's status quo. Cody Allen's not a free agent until 2019. I don't know. I think Sean Kelly's the main one I was looking at. It's possible somebody could make a big play for Addison Reed, who's had a tremendous season setting up for the Mets and obviously is a former closer. Somebody brings him in to close. Those off the top of my head, those are the biggest ones I can think of.
Okay, next email is from, who are you, sir? Or madam? I guess I didn't have a name here. Hey, Ray, Jamal, and Jermaine. Ray, Jamal, and Jermaine. You know who they are? Those sound like
Ray Lewis, Jamal Lewis, and Jermaine Lewis?
Yeah, I don't know who Jermaine Lewis is. Do you? Jermaine Lewis.
Not really, but it sounds right.
Yeah, he was a Raven.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, those are Ravens. I just wanted to say I ended up the champ. I went worst to first in a 6x6 head-to-head categories league and ended up winning in the playoffs. Keeper question. Keep 4 maximum count as my first 4 picks. So he is keeping Betts and Bumgarner. So he can keep 2 more, Scott, as his rounds 3 and 4 picks, or he can keep none. And just keep Betts and Bumgarner. Dozier, Abreu, Seager, I don't know which one. Polanco and Quintana. Dozier, Jose Abreu, Seager, Polanco, and Quintana. You include Abreu's first name, but not Seager's first name. What's up with that? You thought we were going to think it was Bobby Abreu? Come on.
Well, you know what? It may not matter which Seager it is because they're both really good. And I think Seager and Dozier are the choices.
So you think Kyle or Corey is worth a 4th round pick next year? I feel like they're more like 5, maybe. But Kyle Seager, I feel like, is like 6-ish. Corey could be 4.
You're probably right. Kyle Seager at that deep third base is my 6th best. He's right after Carpenter. He's 6th for me. but because there is so much depth, round 4 might be kind of a reach. So that would make a difference which Seager it is. Corey Dozier for sure. If it's Corey Seager, yes. If it's Kyle Seager, no. And the others, no.
Have you seen how bad Brian Dozier's been lately?
there had to be some correction there.
I know. No, I'm not saying for next year. It's just kind of funny. He's carried people to the championship and slumping at the wrong time.
Yep.
Okay, Matt from Boston. Hey, Scott and Adam. Thanks to you guys, I've had 3 first-place regular seasons. Sadly, I have 1 championship to show for it, 2014. All right, that's okay. The problem the last 2 years is I've had the first round bye, and then I get my butt kicked in the next week with the first game after my bye. Guys like Tulo and Adam Jones and Ryan Braun in 2015. This year it was Odor, Lucroy, Lindor, Adam Jones again. So do I just have bad luck, or is there something we can do to, you know, prevent, I'm just paraphrasing here, to prevent losing in the playoffs when he's got such a great team.
Well, yeah, I mean, not to repeat myself, but I think, I don't know if you're the commissioner or if you could talk to the commissioner, and it's going to be difficult in a way that doesn't sound like you're whining, but into making playoff matchups last 2 weeks instead of one, I think that's the best answer without sacrificing, you know, everything head-to-head's supposed to be. And all the excitement that's supposed to come with that.
But look, there's nothing you can do about great player slumping. And that's always going to happen. I mean, it's magnified in the postseason. But look at your team in any week. You've got, let's say you have 10 hitters. I'm sure at least three of them every week are going to have down weeks.
Right? No, I mean, that aspect of it is bad luck. You're right.
Yeah, that's bad luck. Now, yeah. I will say that I did a little bit of research that I thought I felt this way. Mm-hmm. Adam Jones is typically worse in the second half.
Okay.
Pretty much every year, it seems. At least I looked like three of the last 4 years, and I didn't look at 2015 because it wasn't a good year, but he's a first half guy.
A lot of exceptions here you're making.
I didn't look. I mean, I can look right now. But
I looked at three of the last 4 years except the most recent one.
No, I don't know if he was. It just was a down year for him in general, wasn't it, 2015?
Okay. I mean, by the previous standards, yeah, but I think he's kind of settled into that.
Well, he got
year.
Hurt, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
He played 137 games last year.
Well, then there,
and he
there
was much
was
worse.
Brief,
in, he was much worse
absence,
in the
yeah.
second half.
Okay.
Unless I'm looking at, am I looking at this year? No, I'm looking at 2015. Yeah. Okay, so
I totally derailed your point. I'm sorry.
Adam Jones is a guy that struggles in the second half. That's the only one I can't sit like. I can't say that about the other guys. But if you draft him next year, trade him. From Thomas, is Yasmani Grandal a top five catcher next year?
I'm still leaning no on this one. He's not going to be far off. Just doesn't seem to get as much playing time as other catchers with his kind of offensive potential, which is unfortunate. But I don't know why it would suddenly change next year. I think off the top of my head, because I haven't gotten to the catcher rankings yet, we've just made the top four pretty clear, but I think fifth will probably be Evan Gattis.
Yep. So Ramos, Grandal right now is ninth in points leagues and sixth in roto leagues. But in points leagues, he's only a half a point behind Russell Martin and Salvador Perez, who are tied for seventh. So he's basically in a three-way tie for seventh in points and sixth in roto. One guy who's ahead of him in both, by a decent margin in points leagues, is JT Realmuto. And he's fifth. Realmuto is fifth in rotisserie leagues.
Sneaky, sneaky player, that Realmuto.
Yeah.
Doesn't hit the bombs, but does everything else.
Yeah, it worries me a little bit because I kind of feel like he's a bit better version of Francisco Cervelli from a couple years ago, who was really good except for the home runs, and Cervelli he's not good at all now. I think he has one home run this year.
Yeah. How old is Cervelli? He's like 29, right?
I can check for you. Why, how old is Realmuto?
Younger than that. I mean, he's only a sophomore. And,
yeah, so
Cervelli's
30.
Cervelli wasn't.
Cervelli is 30 years old.
Okay, 25 versus 30. And, yeah, I mean, there may be a lot of other factors at play here. I'm more inclined to trust the player who was the prospect and then is good, you know?
Yeah.
And that's Realmuto.
Chris Ferraro in Denver, Colorado, a long-suffering Rockies fan. God, that must be tough being a Rockies fan. Must be
tough. It must be.
They went to the World Series not too long ago. That was cool.
Well, not too long ago was what, 2007?
Yeah.
That was almost 10 years ago. I mean, they've been to the World Series more recently than my team.
Yeah, it's true. Chris, you said dear somebody and somebody. I'm not going to say that. That's dirty. Like, I know what that is. I know what you tried to do there. I'm not in. I'm mad at you now. I have a deep dynasty keeper conundrum. I can keep two of the following former prospects / off-injured veterans. They will not have to actually play next year at all. And I give up nothing by keeping them. So please pick the two players who are most likely to break out long term and become everyday players years down the road. Brett Anderson, Michael Taylor, Tommy Pham, Williams Perez, Justin Nicolino, Rafael Montero, Andrew Heaney, Chris Heston, and Kevin Plawecki.
Andrew Heaney's easily number one. Obviously has to recover from Tommy John surgery, but still a lot of upside there. I think number two for me will be Tommy Pham, because the Cardinals seem to like him, first of all. They're going to have fewer outfielders going forward. They're going to lose some of that outfield depth. They don't have a lot coming up through the pipeline. And when Pham has played, he's generally been productive. So I think, you know, it's a long shot, of course, but I think he'd be my second choice of this group.
Scott, let's do starts and sits for Thursday's games. Jake Arrieta start. Jameson Taillon hosting the Cubs. Start or sit?
Sit.
Shelby Miller and Gio Gonzalez. Are you starting either of them? Arizona at Washington.
Probably Gio, yeah. I'd go for Gio.
Chris Tillman and Francisco Liriano. Baltimore is at Toronto.
Let's say, I'm kind of leaning no on both. More likely Liriano, though.
By the way, I don't think I would start Gio. I think the Diamondbacks have the highest OPS against lefties.
Oh, you know what? You brought that up before. I think you're right.
Gio's been hot garbage, too.
Well, he's been up and down.
He's only been good against the Phillies lately.
Okay, you talked me out of it.
Okay, good. Clay Buchholz and Brian Mitchell in the Bronx.
I don't think so. I don't think either one.
Definitely not Mitchell. Watch him dominate like Sessa last night. Adam Morgan and Mike Foltynewicz, the Phillies at the Braves. Morgan, Foltynewicz.
I mean, it's worth taking a second look at both because Morgan's been surprisingly competent last five starts, it looks like. And Fulte, I mean, against the Phillies, that would have been automatic just a couple weeks ago. But, of course, he's coming back from injury now. His first start back. There are probably going to be pitch limits. There may be some rust. So I'm leaning no on both.
What the heck happened to Julio Teheran last night?
Yeah, it's kind of disappointing that he finishes the year with an ERA over 3, as dominant as he was for the middle portion. But it's just one of those things. I think I don't think there's really anything to take away from that.
No, it's just a shame because he had the matchup against the Phillies, and you were expecting more.
Yeah.
Zach McAllister and Michael Fulmer, Cleveland at Detroit. You got to look at the Indians lineup. I imagine it will be better today than it was yesterday. Verlander dominated the split squad, but McAllister and Fulmer. Are you starting either of these guys?
Boy, is this McAllister's first start of the season? I imagine it's basically just a bullpen game.
Probably.
And so no to him. It's technically his second start of the season. Fulmer, though, coming off one of his best starts, one run in 7 innings against the Royals. Yeah, I'd give him a shot.
Okay, so they are putting McAllister in the rotation and bumping Trevor Bauer to Saturday, I'm guessing, to line him up for the postseason. We've got the Twins at the Royals, Irvin Santana and Jason Vargas.
Yes, Santana. No, Vargas.
Seth Lugo and Jose Arena, Mets at Marlins.
Oh, probably Lugo. Yeah, as he burned me last time when he was my payday pitcher of the week. But I'd run him out there again. He's been pretty good.
Chase Anderson and Cole Hamels. Sit Chase Anderson, start Cole Hamels, right?
Yep.
DeSclafani at the Cardinals against Mike Leake. Are you starting either of them?
I mean, it makes me a little uncomfortable, but I feel like DeSclafani proved himself enough that he's worth sticking with despite the way the last two starts have gone.
Colorado at San Francisco. Tyler Chatwood and Jeff Samardzija. Who are you starting?
Really like Samardzija.
Yeah.
I like how Payday gets a free sponsorship on this podcast.
Is he your guy?
He's my guy tonight. Yeah,
he owns the Rockies.
Sure, and this is in San Francisco. Matt Moore just dominated the Rockies last night. Feel pretty good about it. Now they're going to give up 6 runs.
Jose De Leon at Luis Perdomo. Are you starting De Leon at the Padres?
See, I wanted to make him the guy because I like the matchup and obviously I like the pitcher. But the most pitches he's thrown in any of his three starts is 86. And the last of those starts was 10 days ago. So I think it might just be a five-inning start. And so, you know, Roto League maybe for the percentages, but otherwise, no.
So are you 86-ing Jose De Leon from your lineup?
Sure, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Pitches.
Cause that's like restaurant jargon for, you know, cut the mustard, like 86 the mustard. Don't put it on.
I couldn't have defined it for you, but it made sense in context.
That's what it means, right?
I'm going with you on this. I've heard of, you know what? We have the internet at our disposal.
Right now.
Slang for getting rid of something, ejecting someone.
Yeah. 86
yeah.
It.
Yeah.
All right, more matchups. Tampa Bay at Chicago at the White Sox. Blake Snell and Miguel Gonzalez.
I might start Miguel Gonzalez, but I would not start Snell.
And the A's at the Angels. Sonny Gray against Alex Meyer. What do you think?
I think no to both of them.
This is fun, Scott.
We have a lot of fun together, Adam.
Yeah.
Especially
sure
when we're not hyper recommending pitchers because everybody's playing for a championship. We can just kind of lean back and chew the fat. It's pretty fun. I like it.
Al and I are tied for second place in the auction league. I went into the week up by 4 points or like 4.5 points. I thought I had it in the bag. And now we're tied. And I'm sweating it out. I mean, there's nothing I can do. My lineup's set. I feel like, you know, I gambled on Colin McHugh. It paid off. I gambled on Jay Happ because he's got to start at Fenway, I think. So far, so good. So I did my part. Now it's up to my guys. It's nerve-wracking. And the podcast league, I'm pretty sure is like uber close right now because Al had a big lead going into the final. But Doris Murphy takes the field is taking the field pretty strong and has a 44-point lead right now on Mr. Melchior. You want an update on the standings? Okay. So Al is down by 44 right now. But in the first week of the championship, Al won by 50.5. So it's basically like a 6-point game right now.
Let's see
how many pitchers are left. Al, they have the same amount of pitchers left. Oh my gosh.
Going down to the wire.
Pitcher starts left. Pitcher starts. This is awesome. Okay.
You know what? I was just informed by Kayla on Twitter. Hasn't been tweeting a lot. That's a lot.
Not at all, but she's been tweeting a lot.
I don't
She's very political, that Kayla.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, she just informed me that Tim Tebow is not in the database, and someone needs to fix this. I'm not sure she's wrong.
Get on that, Scott.
Yeah.
That's Scott White. I'm Adam Azer. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week and once a week going forward here on Fantasy Baseball Today. Machado or Bono or Nola.